All right, everyone, welcome back again for another episode of the New Adjuster Podcast, Season 3, Episode 6. Last episode, if you missed it, go back, give it a watch or a listen. We did Tales from the Desk. Today, we'll do a little bit different called Tales from the Field. But as we mentioned, if you missed last week's or any previous episode, go back, give it a watch or a listen, wherever you get your podcasts. Before we get into everything, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves as always. My name is Murphy. I'm in the property training department, and with me today is
Kelsey, property claims manager.
And again, we're super excited to have you here with us. We've got two very special guests that we'll get into shortly, but go ahead, if you haven't already, subscribe to the channel, CNC, Catastrophe, and National Claims. Like this video, leave a comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon so you get notified of all future content that's coming your way. So let's go ahead and jump into today's episode. All right, let's go ahead and jump into it. We got two very special guests today. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Aaron Reed. I'm the flood field manager here with CNC.
There you go.
Rusty Garrett, property field manager.
So as you see, we've got field managers, training managers for both sides, flood and property. So kind of getting both sides of the coin here, getting to kind of show the contrast. So as we asked our guests last week, Aaron, we'll start with you, and then Rusty, we'll go to you next. How long have you been doing it, and how did you get into insurance adjusting?
Yeah, so I think I had a kind of a unique start to get into flood with Hurricane Harvey hitting in 2017. It was a pretty widespread event, and there was, you know, giving out emergency licenses at that time. So I went to the field with practically zero experience in insurance, kind of got thrown to the wolves, you know, and then after that came back in and did some file examining and then just stuck with it since then, been doing flood ever since. So
started as a flood field adjuster
with zero experience.
Wow. That's great. Yeah, that typically doesn't happen.
No.
So
yeah,
but Aaron's special. So all right, Rusty, you go next.
Mine was a kind of a unique situation. I had just completed my career with the my contract career with the military, and I was right in the middle of not knowing whether or not to re-up on that or to kind of venture out into the civilian world. And my brother was working for another company, to remain nameless, and I had a bunch of friends doing the same thing, and I guess it was 2008 or 2009, and my brother kind of convinced me to get into it and take it a shot, and I did, and I just kind of fell in love with the process and everything that it could provide just right away. So just kind of took it and ran.
Yeah, I hear you.
I love that. A lot of it is family related. I know, Aaron, your whole family is a family of adjusters too. Yep. And
seems like it always works out that way.
It seems that way. A lot of people, except for Murphy and I.
Yeah.
We're the lone wolves.
The lone wolves. Speaking of.
Yeah. So what was your first deployment like in the field? And what surprised you most about working in the field?
I think what surprised me the most probably was just the chaos of it all. I mean, I think that's something that a lot of people's not prepared for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you think you have your claims and you're just going to go work them, and you get down there and there's nowhere to stay. There's, you know, no cell phone service. Mm-hmm. There's just a lack of resources. And I mean,
water everywhere.
It felt like you're going into a war zone almost, you know, so, but, it was stressful, but exciting. And, you know, it turned out all right, I guess.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So your first deployment, Rusty, was with property, right?
Yeah.
Was it like a hail or was it auto?
It was a hail. It was a hail loss. It was after a major hail storm up north. And the thing about it is back then it was so much more different than, you know, and I'd actually come in as a claim. I started from the very bottom, coming in as a claims processor. Mm-hmm. And had just given a notice that, hey, I'd really like to give field adjusting a shot.
Yeah.
And really not knowing where that notification went, if anybody was even aware, you know, I filled out a form. And then it was a couple of weeks later, I get a phone call from a name within the company that I was working for that, hey, if you get a call, don't ask any questions. You know, he's kind of a pretty intimidating figure. And so I got that phone call. And again, back then it was so much different. The phone call consisted of an introduction of who he was and a follow-up instruction of be in Maryland. I believe it was Baltimore within 48 hours.
Jeez.
And that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, no follow-on instruction, no, you
that
know,
expect
these. And that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you just, you had to get up and go on a moment's notice and not ask a lot of questions or expect a whole lot back in return.
Guess so, that's how I've heard more about that, like, in the field. That's how it goes. It's like you get a call, random call, and it's like, hey, can you be here? And you don't say no.
Yeah, there was no preface or forewarning or anything like that. Yep. And now, obviously, today's environment is a lot more supported, a lot more structured. But then, you know, we're talking about 15, 16 years ago. It was so much more different and the expectations for you to produce off of so little, you know, was a lot.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, and like I said, Rusty, you've been doing it a little bit longer, but Aaron, I mean, even 2017, that's like 8 years now. I mean, that's, that's not a quick minute. What, and this might be a hard question to answer, but we've asked all of our guests this. Whenever you got started, what are maybe some, you know, preconceived ideas of what you thought it would be like that just either weren't true or they actually came to fruition and they were true? So, like, what are some ideas you thought adjusting would be like?
Like I said, I had a little bit of a unique start to it. So, similar to what Rusty's experience was with getting started with it, I didn't have any background into it before that hurricane hit.
Yeah.
And so I guess the answer is I didn't really have any.
Yeah, so you went in totally blind.
Just totally blind.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
In fact, I was working at a shipyard here in Mobile. Didn't even know how to work a computer. Weren't thinking of anything about insurance.
Yeah.
And same thing, you know, the hurricane hit. My brothers were telling me, hey, this is a once-in-a-lifetime event here with Hurricane Harvey.
Yeah,
If you want to get into it, like, now is your chance.
Yep.
And I remember calling that calling the contact that they gave me, and he told me, I was trying to get him to say, you're going to make X amount of money if you come down here, you're going to get this amount of work.
Right.
And he said, look, just show up in Dallas 2 days from now, and I promise you, you'll have work.
Yeah.
And so I quit my job at the shipyard and took off to Dallas and didn't have a clue what I was walking into.
Yeah, so maybe the idea, maybe, you know, premonition you had was that there would be some kind of structure like pay and amount of claims and amount of work. And even that was obviously we know now, you know, as adjusters that have been doing it a while, it's never like that, you know.
Yeah, it's not like getting a 9-to-5 job working as a field adjuster. So.
Exactly. Rusty, what about you?
You know, I want to be careful going down this path here, but you know, what I'm about to talk about still very much so exists today, but you know, you hear about field adjusting, you hear, you know, so-and-so has told me how much money I can make. Well, what they never tell you is how much money you're going to spend.
Yeah.
And you know, how much you need to have that backing financially in order to really get you started off. Because the last thing you want to do is get somewhere, get set up, get ready to go, and realize I have no more money to continue. You know?
Right, yeah.
And so...
I've seen that happen.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. There can be some support, you know, one way or the other, but, you know, one of my biggest things for newer adjusters is, you know, when that money does turn around, you know, be financially savvy about making sure you can continue on, put some money away, make sure that you can be structured and go and move financially, you know, structured to move forward into the next deployment.
Yeah, so, be frugal about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Eat that ramen.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I can speak from experience, too. I remember the first Rusty, like you, got the phone call, I need you to be somewhere in 48 hours, and mine was in Chicago, and they had to give me an advance before I left.
Right, yeah.
I mean, because I was like, look, I don't have money to just drive to Chicago, get a hotel for however many weeks, you know.
Yeah, it turns out that exists, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know what I'd have done without it,
right,
you know, because I didn't have some nest egg built up. I was 22, 22, 23 mm-hmm. years old, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. So I definitely wasn't expecting that, you know, going into it. There's a you know, I came, like I said, I'm coming into this from a military background, but everything is so structured.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden, it's a world of being dependent on me.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and, you know, so that was a big, but, you know, after I was welcomed into what it was going to be like, yep. you know, I was able to take it and move forward and make a success out of it. Yeah. So.
Well, I think that your military background really actually helps in this 100%. Profession because 100%. You have to be structured. You have to have rules in place. And that's essentially what insurance is. It's a policy. It's rules. You're reading it. You know, you have to abide by it and make sure that we're following best practices, procedures from the carriers. 100%. And I feel like you might have had a one up on us there. Yeah.
It's definitely been beneficial to have that coming into it.
Well, sure. definitely in the field manager role you can keep all these guys and girls mm-hmm. straight because it's tough out here. Yeah. So
it really is.
I want to know how I'm strictly desk lady over here. How do you manage mm-hmm. your day when you're juggling multiple inspections, file deadlines, communication with policyholders, with the carrier? I know they're hearing from me all the time. Hey, when are you going to fill out this form, or when are you going to turn this file in, or whatever? How do you manage juggling that?
So I would say that it goes back to what y'all were saying about being structured, and it really, you have to be, you have to have a lot of self-discipline and a lot of organization and set designated times for certain things. You have to be organized in that sense because it'll start, your days will start running together and you'll mm-hmm. forget to call people back and you'll, you know, not remember to go to an inspection that you were supposed to go to, or, you know, if you don't have a good game plan going into it, mm-hmm. You'll start off behind the eight ball and then the rest of the event will be a struggle. Yeah. And so I think, you know, that's something that I think a lot of people actually make a mistake on is whenever they get a deployment and they get claims, the first thing they want to do is just, let me get there as fast as I can and start inspecting as fast as I can. And I always tell people, just take 2 days before you even go out there. Take 2 days, get your schedule mapped out, get your routes mapped out, contact your policyholders, like have a good game plan going into it, and that'll help you stay organized throughout the event and manage that kind of workload and manage the chaos a little bit.
Imagine just showing up at somebody's house and not taking that time. I think that's so true. Like, to sit down, write it out. Like you said, plan it, your travel days, because you don't want to go over here at this part of town and then be, you know, 50 miles away, your next inspection. Get it all planned out.
That's very true. And just a caveat off of everything that Aaron just mentioned here is one thing that, you know, especially for newer adjusters, but even some of the experienced adjusters, some things that failed to get recognized or considered is the windshield time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that windshield time, because especially after a cat, your lodging may be, depending on the severity of the cat, you may be 100 miles from the closest you can get
to Aaron where said, your claims are going to be. Yeah, there's nowhere to stay.
So you've got to factor in, okay, my day, you've got to be prepared for my day is going to be eaten up for 2 hours there, 2 hours back of windshield time where my hands are tied.
Right.
You know, I may be able to answer phone calls.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know
from driving.
Yeah. and so from, you know, again, depending on it, you may be further, hopefully you're closer, but, you know, definitely be prepared to factor in that windshield time where you can't access your computer. You can't, you know, write estimates. And so there needs to be a plan in place to account for that time that you're absolutely going to be away from being able to actively do anything.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips or tricks in managing your day?
Well, you know, like Aaron said, you know, take that couple of days before, establish an order of operations for yourself to you know, and another thing is, you know, make sure that you have all your personal affairs in line, you know, ahead of time as best as possible. Life happens. We all know that.
Child care, but, everything.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the thing about it is if a cat pops up, especially during hurricane season, we all know.
At least days in advance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
because the last thing that you want to do is agree to deployment, get there, have all these insurers depending on mm-hmm. you to perform, and you've got a thousand other things going on in your personal life
yep.
that, you know, will interfere and be distractions.
So true.
You yeah. know, so take the time, and because the less you have to worry about while you're there, and more you can focus on, the more successful you'll be, not only for yourself, not only for the carrier, not only for the company, but most importantly, for these insureds as well, that again, are depending on you to be successful.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and I know, like, the differences with flood and property, something else that I just thought of juggling is, or figuring out ahead of time, is the policy. You Absolutely. Know, you've got mm-hmm. NFIP guidelines and rule books and binders and everything, and then we've, on the property side, got about 500 different types of policies, endorsements, yeah. et cetera, mm-hmm. that you have to go through. But it's worth it just taking a glance at your deck pages before you go to an inspection and saying, all right, they got an exclusion for this and an endorsement for this, so this is covered, but their lanai on their back porch probably isn't. Mm-hmm. Okay. Screens and
Kelsey,
whatever.
It's becoming to where you're so right that, you know, one thing that I'm about to implement is that as far as our field property adjusters go is make it a requirement yep. to look at, because there are so many things that depend on which way the estimate goes. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. there's so many. We're seeing that more and more with carriers that, yep. hey, you know, and the last thing you want to do on, especially, again, in a cat, mm-hmm. is waste time.
Yep. yep.
You know, yep. Because time is precious. And that 2 seconds, that couple minutes that you could take reviewing that policy and knowing about it in place mm-hmm. before you go
write
in
the
to
estimate
write,
and waste
right.
your time.
Right, mm-hmm. because you got to think about it. You're not only wasting your time yeah. at that point having to, but you're also wasting valuable QC time as
yeah.
well.
QC yeah. time, yeah. and yeah. God forbid QC miss it, and then the desk adjuster gets it, and they're yeah. like, oh, crap, this should have never been covered. Then Absolutely. It goes back three more steps. Absolutely. So, yeah. yeah.
So just to celebrate what you said about reviewing, know that particular declarations page before you go out, you know, and conduct the inspection.
Yeah.
Have it up when you're right, because you're going to need to take photos of it regardless, but have it there before you write that estimate, because...
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's lay this out here, all right? So, again, because we're talking to new adjusters. So on, let's mm-hmm. say, not a Harvey, right, but on a flood catastrophe medium-sized cat, mm-hmm. how many claims can a field adjuster expect to get, like a new one? Or does it really just depend on what the firm has to give out?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that plays into that. I mean, obviously experience level yeah. is going to affect that. How widespread the event is, how sure. many, you know, the claim volume.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes it depends on the location of the event.
Right.
Like certain events will have a very close range of claims where you have one area and all of our work is here.
Right.
And then like in Helene and Milton, you know, it hit Florida and then went all the way up to, you know, through the Carolinas.
Yeah.
And so we were really spread out there. Yeah. And so it depends on, like I said, a bunch of different factors. But yeah. with flood claims, I think a new adjuster would, you know, probably should start off with a maximum of about 20.
Okay.
20, 25 flood claims. That's a pretty good workload for yeah. a new okay. adjuster.
So to piggyback on that, let's say it's 20 claims then. How does a new flood adjuster, be efficient with those 20 claims? Like if you had to plan mm-hmm. their day out for them, about, I mean, yeah. we know take the 2 days to kind of line everything out. But, you know, from a flood field manager and, you know, mm-hmm. and trainer, what's the best way for them to lay out that deployment of those 20 claims that they get?
Yeah, so I would say to start off with, you know, trying to map the closest claims together. So right. you want to inspect in groups. Like Kelsey was saying, you don't want to be at one claim and have to go 50 miles, yeah. you know, to another one. So trying to get your schedule planned where, you know that you're going to be doing probably – I would start off with two claims a day at first, and then if you see that you can get faster,
yeah.
more experienced adjusters probably do 3 to 5 inspections a day for gotcha. Flood claims. But start off with groups of 2 and 3 that are close together.
Yeah.
And then I would also recommend to schedule in the unknown days. Mm-hmm. Like you're going to have a flat tire, you're going to have something where you miss an inspection, and you have all of those – if you have all of your schedule really tight and then one of them gets messed up, it just pushes back everything off. You know. So planning in, you know, designated time of, you know, once every 3 days have an off day to either process paperwork or use it for a rainout day if you got a, you know, reschedule inspections, things like that.
Rusty, same question to you. If a new property adjuster and a cat, let's say they get 20, 25 claims, what's the best way for them to plan out their day-to-day? Because obviously property inspections take a little bit less time than flood.
Sure, absolutely. So. You know, but especially with all the newer adjusters that we're seeing, the worst thing that we can do is assign you too many to begin with and set you in up for failure before you begin. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to see a little bit less than that, you know, in order for you to establish a rhythm. And as far as our experienced adjusters are concerned, you know, the distribution of additional claims is dependent on how many claims are actually closed.
Right, how many you're getting turned.
Absolutely. So like Aaron said, you want to, you know, be able to map out schedule. One thing that I really push out is those initial contacts need to be made within those 24 hours, regardless of the amount. You know, and here's the thing is, you know, if you're having to schedule, if we have adjusters that are having to schedule beyond 7 days out, we would make them let us know because that's not a scenario we would want to have happen. Right. But you have to have – one thing you have to keep in mind is – it's easy for newer adjusters to think, inspect. I want to get, you know, 5-6 done a day.
Yeah.
We have to have a time to write, too.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing you can do in the field that you'll learn is procrastination. And let all those inspections build up because it's such a crazy, busy environment in a cat loss. And you have 1,000 things going on. It's hard to remember your own name by the second inspection, much less all the damage, the detail of the damages from the first inspection.
The little small stuff,
right. So if you build up inspection without considering, hey,
I need to remember what I just looked at.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can really put yourself in a hole that's incredibly hard to get out of.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, managing that those days, and with property inspections, not so much maybe with flood, but in property, we have to schedule in rain days.
Yeah.
You know,
because you can't get on a roof.
Absolutely. And, you know, as much as the weather tries to, you can't always predict that.
Yeah.
You know, so having that cushion, having those days, you know, set aside that, you know, again, to cushion those unforeseen events, is not only helpful, but it's almost a requirement.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's funny. As an adjuster, you kind of want the weather to be bad so you get claims. But when you start working, you want the weather to be
just
great.
So you can breathe a little bit. Yeah.
I can imagine having, you know, all this stuff in my brain, and I'm like, crap, was the stucco cracks on this house, or was it on that
exactly
one? And if you think about, like, South Florida, for example, all those houses start to look the same. All stucco homes and
tile roofs.
Tile roofs, exactly. Yeah. And that's another thing to think about, too, is with the different types of roofs that you've got, you've got to keep things aligned in your mind. And again, those endorsements that you have to really think about.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot. But you know, I mean, that's part of the that's a job description, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's part of, you know, that hustle is what we do.
The hustle.
Right.
That's
absolutely.
It. And I want to add, too, for our new adjusters, that it's what Rusty said was we will give our experienced adjusters more volume off the bat. But like he said, even for our new adjusters, once you start turning claims in, so not only you inspect them, but you write them the same day. Some people write them in the driveway, and that's a good thing, too.
Absolutely.
But you'll get more claims. During a cat, we're still getting claims from the three hurricanes last year.
Right.
So we're still getting new claims from that. You'll continue to get claims and batches of claims as they come in. So don't think that, oh, this firm only gave me 15 claims. I'm going to run to this other firm. No, we will give you more claims.
And well, even if it's a big enough storm. You know, maybe some of our more experienced adjusters, maybe that's the first deployment they've had, you know, in 6 months to a year.
Sure.
So it's always good to start, like Aaron said, start a little low on your inspections, to establish your rhythm, establish your workflow, get that muscle memory back, and then turn it up.
Yeah.
Whenever, there again, that way you don't do a disservice not only to yourself, the carrier, but ultimately to the insurer.
Absolutely. Yeah. Bingo.
Yeah. Yeah, it would definitely be better to take less claims and have a better quality than it would be to try to go out there and get as many as you can, and then you can't, you know, do your job well enough because you bit off more than you could chew.
Yep. I've been that looks way to give worse that for you person than, more claims that they turned in beautiful files than I am somebody who just threw something together and threw it at us. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, good stuff. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back for part two. All right, everybody, fantastic first segment. Before we jump into part two with our interview of Rusty and Aaron, let's go ahead and give you our sponsor of the week, Blue Leopard Agency. Marketing shouldn't feel like a guessing game. If you're overwhelmed and looking for a way out of the chaos, Blue Leopard Agency has your back. Escape the marketing jungle, reach your ideal customers, and fuel your business growth with a custom strategy. Get started today at blueleopardagency.com.
I'll ask the real down and dirty questions. Just kidding. What's the toughest situation that you faced in the field, and how did you get through it?
I would say, you know, one of the hardest things for me is when you're in the office and you're doing an insurance claim, it's just paperwork to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. But the hardest thing for me was being in someone's house, and you realize that it's not just a claim. It's not just paperwork. Like, this is someone's actual, like, I've stood there before where you have a homeowner who's sifting through their stuff and they're crying, and it makes it really real for you at that point, to where, you know, this is what we're doing is affecting people's lives, and how well we do that can make that better for them, make it an easier process, or it can make it worse for them if you don't handle a claim like you're supposed to. So, but, you know, just being in that environment, to your question, and dealing with the high emotion of what it's like to be in the field, because it gets really real when you're standing in somebody's living room and all it's of their gone. Stuff is gone all around you. Yeah, you know, it's can be very difficult to deal with, because outside of doing claims, there's not many times that you're put in that kind of a position, you know, so it's not really something that you can prepare well for. But I would say to as far as how to get through that, just remember how important it is on what we're doing.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that what we are doing can either help them or hurt them. And to some degree, that makes you feel it's rewarding in that sense, you know. Yeah. So
you're responsible for a lot's on your shoulders. And I always preach, my number one thing is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're standing there, or even if you're in the office and you're talking to these people and they're like, Kelsey, my whole house is gone. You know, tornado came through, or a fire or whatever. And you just have to think about, God, I can just.
Well, the role you play and really getting that insured back on their feet is a very real responsibility.
Yep.
100%.
You know, so.
What's the situation you've been
in, Rusty? Well, I need to, before I answer, I need to know, are we talking about specific or?
Okay. I mean, what's the toughest situation
you've been in? One of my most difficult specific situations is 2011, when all those tornadoes came down and stemmed from Joplin, and it was all the way down to Alabama, and I was in Huntsville, Alabama, and there was a, I had gone through this, we're talking about $1 million homes, total losses. And I had already gone through the National Guard in this particular neighborhood to access the property. And when going into it, it was really my first, I'd had large losses before, but this was my real first total loss.
Right, destruction.
And, you know, so the insured advised me that he wasn't sure whether or not he was going to be able to make it there or not. And, you know, I kind of, no problem, you know, I got it. And so I went forward, and when I arrived, only the mailbox was there. And there was a literally, I'll never forget it. It was literally like probably about a 25 to 30 feet wall of debris in between each property. Mm. And so if you're standing on one property and you look to the neighboring property, you'd see that wall of pine trees and debris. Yeah. And so I was moving along, you know, thought I think it maybe had one or two walls left standing. So I was able to kind of orient where I was on the property. And it's just a real funny feeling. All of a sudden, I get to wrapping it all up, and I get this real funny feeling that something's just, you know, I looked at the decorations page. I'd printed out to reference it because I knew it was a total loss. I thought I had done everything I needed to do to prepare myself. But something just wasn't adding up. And like I said, I'd been there. I was just about to wrap up my inspection. It was about 2 hours into it. And all of a sudden, I just started to hear my name. Somebody's screaming my name. And like I said, all you see in between the neighboring properties is that wall of debris. And so I started moving towards the sound of my name. And sure enough, yeah, somebody's yelling my name from the other side of this debris. And I kind of yelled at him, meet me at the end of the debris wall here. Mm-hmm. And it was actually the insured trying to get my attention to let me know I've spent 2 hours inspecting the wrong property.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So, and the lesson learned from there, you know, is with total losses, if possible, it's always better to have the insured there to say, you know, hey, this is where this was. We had this here. And what we're talking about here is actual total losses, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I always made a legitimate effort to make sure that any further total losses that I had made all efforts possible to make sure the insurer could be there and present to orient. Because it's not only it's a funny story, but at the end of the day, what they can bring to the inspection
right.
when there's nothing there to inspect right. is more than valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the kind of stuff you do one time, and then you realize
that you're absolutely right.
that'll change you from then on.
Yeah. Is that the wrong mailbox?
Yeah.
So, I know we're talking about cats a lot here, but I mean, look, we're in hurricane season. It's absolutely. The way it is. Mm-hmm. We are in cat season now. So stay on topic here. Aaron, when you have a, you know, when a cat hits and, you know, claims are going out, sure, you've got experienced adjusters, been doing it a while, and mm-hmm. they're ready to go. They get their claims, they take off. But that new adjuster, you know, they've got questions, they've got anxiety, their stress level is already high, and they hadn't even left their own driveway yet. Mm-hmm. What do you do, or what tips or, you know, ideas do you give them to kind of keep them calm, keep them grounded, like, hey, it's going to be okay, you can do this? Because that happens, right? New mm-hmm. adjusters, everybody has that feeling.
Well, I would say that I think what a lot of people get bogged down with is trying to think about the entire process at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain degree, you have to look at it just one step at a time on the claims, because you're not going to get the entire event done overnight.
Right.
It's a process. It takes time. And, you know, whenever I started off in the field, I was actually about 3 hours from the nearest help room that they had set up. I would go out one day, you know, gather my documentation, drive 3 hours back to the help room and say, all right, y'all help me figure out how to process this information that I just got. And I took it one step at a time. And that's what I try to tell people. Try to get close to a help room if you can. Use all the assistance that is out there in the field. Mm-hmm. And don't try to figure out everything.
Yeah.
Don't try to have the answers to every single problem that you're going to run into. You know, step one is make your contacts.
Yeah.
Focus on that. Step one, get all the contacts made. Step two, get your schedule set up.
Right.
You know, just kind of worry about one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And kind of the saying, you know, cross that bridge when you get there. Like, as you run into situations and as you get deeper into the event, there's going to be people down there. There's going to be the help room. There's going to be resources for you. So, you know, that kind of compartmentalizing it like that can help to not get bogged down with trying to figure out the entire process, you know.
Well, and to your point, too, you know, field, again, everybody knows it's so much different from desk. If you're a desk adjuster, you're going to get claims that are at all different stages, at the beginning, mm-hmm. the middle, the end. Field, you're getting all of them at the beginning.
Yep.
Nobody's going to give you a field claim that's at the end and say, hey, finish this, or mm-hmm. in the middle, right? You're going to have all the field claims from day one where you contact and you take them A to Z, you know, mm-hmm. through the life of that claim. So you're right. If you can kind of piecemeal it out and, you know, kind of segment them in your mind, like, I need to do all these, then I need to do this, then the prelim, mm-hmm. then, you know, it does make it less daunting. Yeah, that's a good
point. And I've told people before, you know, if somebody can go out and get a good sketch of a property and they can get a really good photo report, I can just about write the claim for them in the help room.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't worry about trying to figure out coverage on the entire policy or how to estimate for everything that you're going to run into. You know, worry about one step at a time.
Right.
And, you know, knowing what you have to document, knowing how to take pictures, getting your phone calls made, like that type of stuff. If you compartmentalize it, that helps to not get so bogged down and kind of freaked out whenever the event first fires off. Yeah. You know?
That and then also explaining to the insureds, because you're going to have PAs, you're going to have attorneys, you're going to have contractors out there that are like, hey, you need to do this. What about this? What happens with that? And my advice to everybody is always tell them, I'm here to document the damage. I'm here to take the photos. I'm not making a coverage decision right now. This is not what I'm here for. Your desk adjuster will handle that. But I'm just take as many photos as you can.
Because
like you said, if they have a well-documented file, you can get help writing that estimate. You know, we've talked about that too. We have trainers here, but like the help room or the war rooms, as we call them, they're there for a reason. And if you need help, get there.
Yeah.
And you know, we kind of kicked things off by me telling you how my introduction was and how my first assignment was, where you get that phone call and there's, you know, thrown out there as a lone wolf. And it's not that way anymore. Especially here specifically at CNC, one of the things I'm very proud of is the amount of support we do offer, especially, you know, incoming adjusters, because it's so not that way anymore. Everything from our HR department, and our unbelievable HR department that offers incredible support, that knows, you know the difference between offering that support to newer adjusters and experienced adjusters, all the way to our training department. I mean, you know, we certainly don't do any holding, but we absolutely offer every bit of the support, go above and beyond to do so. So I think that's one thing that kind of sets us apart, but also something very comforting that newer adjusters that may have never gone down that road before or about to go down it the first time need to be aware of, that regardless, it's still going to be intimidating at the end of the day.
Right.
But the level of support that's available, but the thing about it is they've got to ask the questions.
Yeah.
You know, we need to know that you need help.
Right.
You know, so you're probably going to hear me repeat myself later on in our discussion, but communication is everything. You know, as long as you know, we receive that, we know how to help you. We know what you need help with. You know, again, we kind of set ourselves apart by getting our newer adjusters down the road a little bit better.
And Rusty, you take this one too. You're talking about communication there and how ask for help. So many new adjusters are scared to death to ask for help because they think that you're going to view them as they don't know what they're doing. They can't work. We're not going to give them any more work. Everybody was new at some point. Everybody had a first day. I've said it a million times in this podcast and in this office. So you're right. They have to communicate. Let us know if you're having issues. Because, I mean, I know both of you can speak to this, but Rusty specifically, if somebody's asking you questions, you would rather them ask as opposed to not knowing. 100%. And then it just gets worse and snowballs on them, right?
Now, a very good point there, Murphy. But, you know, one thing that we expect, not only of new adjusters or experience, as any professional, we expect any adjuster to take initiative, okay? Now, we want you to take that initiative. But and taking that initiative, it opens you up to knowing what questions to ask, because it almost help me help you, you know? So, but if I never know you need that help, it doesn't matter if it's a cat or if it's a daily claim, you know, you're going to find yourself in a hole. I'd 100% rather you ask the question than try to figure it out yourself when the answer is a phone call, email, text away.
Right.
You know,
not even like that the question is stupid, but I say this every single episode, I feel like. Come to me with a possible solution.
Don't come
to me with, what do I do? I'm stuck. I don't know what to do.
Exactly. Or
it's like, hey, Kelsey, this is what's happening.
And I think that circles back to the initiative.
Yeah,
you know?
I think this is what we should do. Do you have other thoughts, or should I handle this a different way? But come to me with something. Like, you know. Don't make it so hard.
Yeah.
And I'll say to the point of the importance of reaching out for help, you know, depending on what the issue is that you need assistance with, sometimes you get in a position where that help is no longer available in the sense of, like, for example, with going out onto an on-site inspection, if you don't document well enough or if you don't know what you're supposed to take pictures of or what you're supposed to record, like the make, model, serial numbers of appliances and stuff like that, the longer you get down the road, that information may not be available anymore. Right. And so because you didn't, you know, you didn't ask for help or you didn't know what you were doing going into it, now you can't go back and get that information. So, you know, reaching out and making sure that you're comfortable with what you're walking into ahead of time. Yeah. And if you don't know, it's a lot better to ask than it is to get later on down the road to the point of writing the estimate or completing the file and you're missing critical information or, you know, you're missing this documentation that is no longer available to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know a lot of people say, well, when you're in a CAT situation, there are groups of people there. You're not alone.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I always say get with somebody, shadow them for a day if you need to just see what they're doing on their first inspection.
A ride along.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's it's not easy. Nope. I can't imagine going out and doing a flood inspection, like, way.
But, you know, and just to come back to what you opened up with, you know, being afraid to ask some questions, don't be that person, you know, because that, again, that will lead you onto a path that we won't be able to extend our hand and pull you out of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, especially if you're new adjuster, get started on the right track by asking questions. But, again, I just want to emphasize, take the initiative.
Yeah.
You know, use the support system that we have available, which I'm sure we'll discuss a little bit later. But, you know, ask the right questions, but know the questions to ask by taking the initiative.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's not just our trainers or our field managers that you want to reach out to. You have access to dispatch, to the desk managers, to people like myself, to RDL. And if one of us doesn't know the answer, we're going to find the answer for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many options at your fingertips. And maybe it's something that is policy related. And y'all are like, hey, Kelsey, can you help out with this and help this field adjuster? It's never field adjusters call me. I can't help you. You got to go over here. Right. That's never how it is. Yeah. And you have so many resources at your fingertips to really kind of, there's no way you can fail.
Yeah, and I think it's our job, too, as managers, trainers, whatever, to create that rapport between us and adjusters, new and experienced, that, hey, we are here to help you.
Yeah.
You know, we're not judging you by any means.
We're all in it together.
Yeah, we all work for CNC. We're all on the same team. If you do good, we do good. Because if you do good, we get more claims, and then therefore you get more claims. It's just the way it works. It's the domino effect. Exactly. Yep. So
we make each other's job easier.
Yeah. And that's even adjuster to adjuster. You know, we've mentioned that before. Peer to peer, help that next person. You know, help the person that's working beside you or working next to you or the next new person that you get involved in this industry. Because again, if a firm does good, the firm gets more claims.
Absolutely.
One adjuster is not going to get this firm more claims.
Yeah.
Yep. And you need, it takes a village. So
stay fit.
And they were all there at one point.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Kelsey. Sorry.
It's okay. I know we kind of touched on this already a little bit with you, Rusty, but I'm hoping you have another one up your sleeve for me. What have you ever made a mistake? Or I know we've all made mistakes. What's a mistake that you made early on that taught you a valuable lesson in this industry?
Early on, you know, and it was during, if we're talking about specifics again, you know, I don't have a humorous story this time, but one of the things that does come to mind is, I stressed earlier about getting your personal lives, getting your personal affairs all in order as best as possible. I'm able to sit here and say that today from learning the hard way. Mm-hmm. You know, I was younger and had a couple of years of success as a field adjuster and kind of went into it taking it for granted that, hey, you know, I can just handle anything. I had a couple of things come up and really just kind of let my emotions lead my,
Bob in there.
Yeah. And so there again, I want to just rehash. If you find yourself in that scenario, take a step back. Have that day, because like we were talking about earlier, you know, it very well might be a work overload where every day is set up on the calendar that you have to get work done, have to get done. But if at all possible, take that day to be able to breathe for a second, you know, because that will be monumental as far as being able to successfully complete the rest of what you've got lined up. Yes. I think that's extremely important.
Especially working in a high-stress environment.
Absolutely.
Like we do, because during a cat, we're working 7, 12, sometimes 14, 16, 18 hours a day.
Absolutely.
You're already fed up. I know that I walked out of here in tears on multiple occasions, just overworked, stressed. But you got to come out of it, and I've learned that same mistake the hard way, letting things, get to me that really shouldn't. We're here for a reason. We're here to help other people.
Well, when you work yourself to where, you're just about ready to blow because you haven't taken, we're only human beings. I mean, at the end of the day, we've got to be able to manage that work that we're expected to complete, but be mentally and emotionally able to do so. And sometimes it's just a little bit of time, a half a day. Just to decompress will again be monumental in being able to be productive and successfully complete the rest of your tasks throughout the week.
Yeah. Or just take a nap.
Yeah.
It's always the key for me. What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, I would say that, I think probably the biggest mistake I made is diving into it without any experience and prior training and, not being really not being prepared for what I was getting into. I remember being down there in Houston with a notebook of graph paper and, 30-foot rollout tape. And, there was so much more that I could have done if I would have, what we're talking about earlier, gotten with somebody that was experienced in it and got some tips and tricks and tell me what tools I need to have out here. And that first deployment for me probably could have went so much smoother had I been more prepared and had the right equipment. I didn't bring rubber boots with me going to a flood event. So it's like,
oh, gosh.
We
have things now like these Facebook pages and that can go and read through the post, and it's like, hey, I'm on my first deployment. What do I need? We have those things at our fingertips. I started the same time as you during Harvey. I don't feel like it may have been a thing back then, but we have so much knowledge and options at our fingertips that it's there just for the taking, it's a hard job. I remember starting it as well and being, what have I gotten myself into? And then there's days and years and months.
You've got to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You've got to take the initiative and the will to reach out and lean on others, especially if you're newer. Yeah. Look at those Facebook pages. Google things online. As far as adjuster forums, things like that.
TikTok's got a lot now too.
So much digital content out there.
That there again wasn't there.
It wasn't
certainly when I was getting into it. And those are all set up for your success. But you've got to take the initiative and go out and, and I think it all comes back to how bad do you really want to do this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So before we let both of you go today, final thoughts here, words of wisdom for somebody that wants to grow and succeed in this industry on the flood side, Aaron.
I'll say on the flood side, just the nature of the business or the industry, floods, they don't really happen every day. So it's kind of a thing where, we have adjusters that come in and they work a hurricane event. And like we had people on this Helene and Milton event that they didn't work since Ian, because that's when the last major flood was. And so finding ways to stay engaged even throughout the year, it can really make or break how well an event goes for you, because, I'm not sure how it is on the property side, but in the flood world, if you're off for a year,
there's so much that changes.
Yeah, you're behind the times, So I would say, if you're looking to get into it, or, maybe you've recently done a deployment, I would find ways to stay engaged, you know, go to training classes that are being put out there. I know with at CNC we have weekly meetings with adjusters that we, you know, even if you don't have claims, you can still attend the meetings. Yeah. We talk about our, you know, updated direction changes or estimating changes or what we're seeing from the office. So there's plenty of ways that you can stay active and stay engaged even if you don't have claims to make sure that you're ready to go when something happens. The only other thing I would say for new adjusters is I feel like office experience is worth way more than the field in terms of exposure to claims.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll take that back. I'm not going to say worth more, but the knowledge that you get from being in the office and seeing, like, I can see from being in the office the back end of it and what work product they're looking for, and that makes you a better field adjuster whenever you go out and say, okay, I see what they're looking for over here, and now I can better recreate that final report or that estimate package.
Both and are just irreplaceable. Like, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah. And if you can find a way to put yourself in that environment,
do
both.
You know,
look at, you know, who's all here in the office when that you can there again lean on, you know, for those questions or that additional knowledge and get input and advice from the ones that are experienced and been doing this for years that are right here in the office that you put yourself into in that situation. Yeah. So yeah,
'cause you go, you know, a field adjuster, they'll go out and get a batch of claims, and that's the batch of claims that they're exposed to for that event.
Right.
If you come in the office and you work as an examiner or, you know, different positions, even though you may not be directly handling that claim from start to finish, I probably see thousands of claims, you know, touching them or hearing people talk about coverage scenarios and, you know, just, you know, involved in it in some way. And you see so much more that better prepares you for the field. Yeah. So depending on what career path a new adjuster wants to take, I would say, you know, if you do go to the field after your batch of claims is done, try to find ways to come in the office and, you know, take on an examiner role or something like that to get both sides of the of the picture.
Yeah.
And I think that'll make you more well-rounded as an adjuster in the long run.
I gotcha. All right, Rusty, what about you?
Well, just to kind of caveat off of some of the things that Aaron said, I think, you know, those constantly seek out new training opportunities. Here again, like I said earlier, one thing that I feel like sets us apart is the training that we do provide, not only, you know, before or immediately following an event, but year-round. We have a training portal, a learning portal that is above and beyond what anybody else is doing in this industry that's available to anybody at any time. And and here's the thing, a lot of it's free.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you know, and the thing about it so it constantly seek to get better mentally, physically, you know, be prepared. Another thing that it may sound silly, but we're talking about specifically field adjusters, don't let your health get to where, you know, if you have that long time out, you don't have to live in the gym, all right? But it can be a very physically demanding job.
It's tasking.
And if and if you're taking that amount, a lengthy amount of time in between deployments, don't let yourself. I know the older I get, the harder it is to stay in shape. You know, and so realize that hey, you've got to be carrying 24-foot ladders. You've got to, you know, you've got to be. You got to eat right. Make sure you maintain good physical health because you don't want to. When does hurricane season happen?
Yeah,
in hot.
Right, yeah.
Mucky months, right?
Yeah.
So you don't want it to be more physically demanding than you can handle. Right. A lot of people just kind of overlook that.
Well, good stuff.
Yeah.
Again, I appreciate both of you. Well, we both appreciate both of y'all being on.
We do.
Aaron and Rusty, wish you all the best of luck, and we'll see y'all when this podcast ends because we all work together.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you guys so much for having us. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, everybody, we just wrapped up another fantastic episode with two really great guests, with Aaron and Rusty. Super thankful that you joined us today. Again, if you missed any of our previous content from other episodes or even previous seasons, go back, give them a watch or a listen wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to our channel, CNC Catastrophe and National Claims. That's on YouTube. Like, hit the bell icon so you get notified of all future content that is coming your way. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Thanks, y'all.